stand by. Good day, and welcome to the IBM Tivoli Talk, Scale-out File Services Combines Storage, Hardware, and Software Products and Services Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Tricia Jiang. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Karen. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining this call today. My name is Tricia Jiang, and I work as one of the technical evangelists for the Tivoli product set. And I'm glad to introduce today Sin Oomph, who is both the inventor as well as the evangelist for this new scale-out file services product. Sin is going to be taking you through this product. He did say he is welcome. You're welcome to same time him with questions as he talks, and he'll try to answer those. But for those who are either don't have access to same time or who are a business partner, we will have a question and answer session at the end. And you should have been able to download the presentations from either Partner World or from the Tivoli Talk website. If you did have problems downloading, you can email me at Tricia, T-R-I-C-I-A, at us.ibm.com. Once again, Tricia at us.ibm.com. And with that, we'll go ahead and turn this over to Sin.
Okay, thank you all for joining that call. I want to drive you through a presentation deck I created for the Scale-out File Serving offering. Scale-out File Services is a service product which is owned by GTS today, but it's developed between, or it's basically funded and initiated by STG together with GTS. You folks are from Software Group, or the IBM parts are mainly from Software Group, so this contains a lot of software content as well in the solution package, and I will guide you through the presentation and try to give you as much background as possible on SOFS. So if we go to slide number 3, I want to talk briefly a little bit on what customers understand today when they deploy NAS solutions. So customers that are running NAS solutions today tend to create multiple islands inside their companies. So basically what they did is they created many instances of Windows file servers or network appliance file servers or higher EMC or other NAS systems inside their company. And the problems that occurred with doing that is basically they're creating multiple islands of data because every server just keeps a specific part of their information they need for doing their day-to-day business. And so they're basically splitting up the data, and it's very, very hard to get your hands on all the data you need for your daily work because it's in a distributed and separated environment. If you go to slide number 4, it shows the biggest pain points, at least I've seen in the market or with customers that I'm working together on NAS solutions in the past. So some of the biggest issues customers having in the NAS environment is that the data rate that they basically having is growing at a two-digit, and it's really a higher two-digit percentage year to year by basically every customer in the industry. So everything that we're calling unstructured data, and that is really the data set we are looking for with attacking with the SOFS solution. So we are not looking for attacking real database solutions. So this is really for the unstructured data, so data that is stored in Web 2.0 environments, data that is stored in Office environments, and everywhere where filers are used today, basically. So the problems they have is that each individual box they're introducing into their environment, say creating that new island, and every island has or is coming with a lot of additional management overhead. So every new island you're deploying, you have to manage, and so the total cost on managing all those boxes is getting higher and higher basically with every new box, means with every grow in storage requirements you have on NAS, your total ownership or your total management costs grow up dramatically. The other pain point they're having is because they're creating those islands, it's very hard or close to impossible to create or apply a simple policy across all the data islands they're having. So managing them all together from a central point of view is very, very hard. And with the out-of-the-box solutions that are coming from the NAS vendors that exist today, you can't do that. You have to buy some third-party software for doing that. And even then, it's not really an integration. It's more a workaround for existing problems, but it doesn't integrate very well exactly in all that environment the customer's having. So another requirement that we're seeing quite common these days is specifically in the digital media area, customers looking for real parallel access to the data that they are storing. So to give you an example here, I'm working with many customers in the digital media environment, and what they're basically looking for is a scalable solution where they can basically put all their video, audio data, everything in raw or compressed format in various different formats on a single NAS system, and then can attach many, many different, even sometimes hundreds of workstations working on the same video file, basically cutting and pasting multiple video and audio contents together to a new output file. And the data rates those people are asking for are sometimes in the gigabyte per second range. This is something you can't achieve with a standard NAS box because those boxes are limited by multiple architecture designs internally, and the only way to really address this issue is having a real scale-out approach, which I'm explaining in a couple of slides. The other thing is making those services high available is also very complicated. So if you're buying, for example, a NetApp box, it's very easy to set up two pairs of the NetApp box and let's do a high availability takeover between two sites. But a failover support is different than high availability. So high availability basically means all the time all the nodes are on. And that's also a very huge differentiation between the SOFS system and other solutions in the market, because the SOFS system is an always all active configuration. That means basically every resource in the system is active, every resource in the system is available for processing the data requests coming in by the clients, and we basically workload balance the request inside the system, but try to keep all the services up and running until we lose so many hardware because so many different sites and systems would be failed that we no longer can survive keeping up the service. But in general, whatever dies in an SOFS configuration, if it's configured right and implemented right at the customer side, all independent pieces of the SOFS solution can fail without a real impact of availability to the system. So the system will always try to keep up all the services across all the nodes that you're running in your SOFS system. Backing up data is a very huge issue for people, specifically people working with file-based backups, or the Tivoli people here in the call probably heard several times from the customer, oh, we have a backup window of 12 hours, and it takes whatever 10 hours to scan the system, then it takes 2 additional hours to back up the data. And if we're missing a backup window because we have problems in production, problems with network or infrastructure, there is basically a big pain for them to keep the next backup window because the backup windows increase from day to day if you don't do an incremental backup. It's not a TSM problem. It's a general problem how those systems are designed and how the backup works in that way. SOFS has a couple of additions to inside the solution which address specifically that problem. Just to give an example here, SOFS uses an internal scanner for the file system we use internally, which is called GPFS, and there has been tremendous work on a scanner for the file system internally, which allows you to basically scan millions of files within a couple of seconds. And so we can scan a file system even if it contains tens or hundreds of millions of objects. We can scan that within a couple of seconds and immediately hand over the list of files to a TSM server, or for data migration also to an HSM server. So the system scales very, very well for the huge number of objects, and so we can keep the backup windows very small, and we can allow customers to run multiple backups per day. And in today's environment, they are happy if they can survive a backup every 24 hours, so we can help them improving the backup time and basically the number of backups they can run per day. ILM is also a very important topic, and I touched that briefly on a couple of other slides. So there are 50 slides in that chart deck, so I'm not going to every slide, so I'm skipping a couple of them, and so I tell you the number that I'm jumping to all the time. So if you go to slide number 6 now, slide number 6 is the way that we see how SOFS is basically working. So as you saw on the slides earlier, there were different islands of data in SOFS. These are not really islands. In SOFS, we can create separated cells, but even so cells, which is basically like a grid of multiple nodes working together on the same data, we can interconnect multiple cells together. So even if you have 5, 10, 20, whatever cells, for the end users, they look like a single system, and what's even more important, also for the administrator, it looks like a single domain, like a single global namespace, and he can access all the data in the system through the same path, independent on what system he's basically working. So if we go to slide number 7, that just illustrates again the big difference. So SOFS is basically a grid of multiple nodes. All the nodes have access to the same data compared to the classical way like NAS systems work, where basically every node has a direct attached disk, or it could be a SAN disk, but it's basically one fixed content attached to one fixed server and then exposed to the client. So in the SOFS way, he just accesses the data over a single name in the network, and then he sees all his different departments, all his different structures. So it's very easy for him to find information here. We skip slide number 8, and we also skip slide number 9. We go immediately to slide number 10. We had a couple of customers that asked for very huge bandwidths, as I mentioned earlier, specific from the digital media area. So people ask us, we need a system that can scale up to multiple gigabytes per second. So can you help out with that? We have today multiple NetApp systems deployed, or we have standalone Windows Server. Each of the nodes probably provides us a couple of tens of megabytes per second. Some of them scale up to 100 or 200 megabytes per second, but we're really talking about gigabytes per second. And because we have the need for accessing the same data with that speed, so it's not an option to separate this again in islands to separate the load. So what they really were looking is a scalable system that they can access the same data over multiple systems, but with very high bandwidth per system. This chart, it's very busy with numbers. The only number that is really important is the last row on the right side. So what you're seeing here is basically, this is a performance benchmark we did with a mid-range SOFS system. And the number you're seeing here is just the performance from a single node. That cluster contained four nodes in, or the system contained four nodes in a cluster. And one individual node was doing 607.97 megabytes per second. So that was the data rate we could get out of the system. The limiting factor for that number was the internal infrastructure, how the system was interconnected between the storage and the system. So we did also a test across four nodes. And with four nodes, we were able to push 2.6 or roughly 2.5 gigabytes per second out of the system. So what you're seeing on that number is basically the system scales very linearly. So with every node you add to the system, as long as you have fast enough disk drives behind the system, it basically scales linearly with every node you attach to the system. And that gives you that great performance and bandwidth that many customers ask us to provide them specifically in their digital media worlds. On slide number 11, I'm showing a very similar performance statistic. This is from a Windows client, so a standard Windows desktop, and we used a small tool that is called DiskSpeed. It's a tool that is simply there to test the performance between a single client and a server. And this client was equipped with a gigabit link. So what you can see here is that we were doing 109 megabytes per second. And if you calculate the physical link speed of a gigabit and what you can get really through in question of data, so 109 megabytes per second are in the higher 90% of what the physical link can provide. So you can imagine there is not really much more you could do to improve the performance here. We also did tests with bonded adapters, and with bonded adapters we basically got twice the amount of data through the network. So that two slides simply should show you that it's really possible to create an extremely scalable NAS system, and that is basically what SOFS is about. To understand a little bit better how the internals work and how we leverage GPFS internally, you could go to slide number 13. The GPFS overview. So the GPFS, a little bit of background for the people who are not in the call or later replay the call and don't have GPFS knowledge. So the GPFS file system is basically developed or was developed in 1996. Originally it was called Multimedia File System. That's also the reason why it has the MM commands on the command line when you install the packages. GPFS is used internally in multiple IBM products. So it's used, for example, for the Business Intelligence Accelerator for SAP. It's used in our IBM virtual tape storage solution, and it's used in multiple other things. The product is today available on Power as well as on Intel for multiple different distributions and operating systems. And GPFS was designed from the first day basically to meet a large supercomputer requirements. So, for example, Department of Defense or other weather forecast stations and all this kind of companies that have the requirement to combine thousands of nodes into a single file system, into a single cluster that are extremely reliable, have a very quick communication between each other, and can be managed from a single point of view and basically have the possibility to share the access between all the disks that they are attached to between all the multiple nodes. The other big difference for GPFS compared to other file systems is that GPFS basically does everything in parallel. So every data as well as metadata access to the underlying hardware is really done in parallel between all the nodes. So there is no single lock or token manager or single instance that basically decides which node can talk to which particular piece in the system. It's on a very fine-based granularity how GPFS handles internally the access to the specific blocks in the system. So from that point of view, there is no real scalability issue combining a cluster with hundreds or even thousands of nodes easily. And the current systems that are designed on paper, at least, they are not installed right now, but they are running five-digit numbers of nodes. So we are talking about 10, 20, 30,000 nodes in a single cluster. And the biggest cluster today that is deployed has 2,700 nodes in a single cluster using a single file system and share that information between all the nodes in the cluster. It was designed for extremely high performance. I'm showing a couple of slides early which explain what I'm talking about when I'm talking about really high performance and space. If you go to slide number 40, it shows exactly the numbers. So this is one example. It was deployed in 2005. It's the ASCII's purple supercomputer. It's a 1,500 node system. It has 2 petabytes in a single mount point in a single file system. It contains something like 11,000 disk drives, and this one is doing 126 gigabytes per second parallel I/O measured down to the file system. So to a single file, and that is a very, very huge number. If you compare that with current NAS systems, we are talking about really hundreds of megabytes in most of the cases. Some do a gigabyte per second. But on a file system level, doing this huge amount of I.O., this was the absolutely key why we decided for GPFS, for using it internally in SOFS for providing that extremely scalable NAS solution. So slide number 15 talks about the lifecycle management. So and with lifecycle, we also add the first software group functionality into that system. So for lifecycle management, there are two different pieces. One piece is GBFS internal features that we leverage and extend with the SOFS framework. And then there are features where we are leveraging and integrating TSM as well as HSM into the solution. I have an architecture chart where I'm showing later how that all fits together. But to explain a little bit what information lifecycle management means in Guide SOFS. So the GPFS file system itself provides us three very important functions. One is called the storage pooling concept, the second is called file set, and the third is basically called the policy engine. The storage pools, you have to view that as a combination of multiple runs that you're exporting out of the same type of storage and combining multiple of those disks, or physical disks, together into one pool. So as you can see on the right picture, the system has a gold, a silver, a browser, as well as a tape pool, and it also has a system pool. So the system pool is the internal pool. It's used by GPFS to store metadata and multiple other things. And let's assume the gold pool, for example, is a combination of a couple of fiber channel disks that are coming out of a DS8000. The silver pool are fiber channel disks that are coming out of a DS4000, for example, and the browser pool is a combination of multiple SATA disks that are exported out of a DS4700, for example. So, behind tape, we probably have an Anaconda or whatever, a huge tape device, and that is integrated as an additional pool in the system. So that is basically the storage pooling concept, that you connect multiple similar devices or pool multiple similar devices under a speaking name like gold, silver, browser, tape. And now the important thing to managing them are the policies. But I'm going to the policies on the next slide. So first let me briefly touch on file sets. So file set is something that is somehow related to storage pools as well as policies, but not directly. So file sets are basically, you have to view that as something like a virtual volume where you can say, I want to define a subdomain inside my file system, so a subtree or a directory inside the huge file system, because imagine we can store have a multiple petabyte big file system, and you probably want to have some subdirectories or some smaller domains that you want to manage, and that is basically what we're calling a file set. So a file set describes nothing else than all the data that belongs below a specific level in below a specific subdirectory in the global file system. So now the policy is really coming into place. When you go to the next slide, here we are explaining, and this is slide number 16 for people joined later, we're explaining the storage policy. So there are more than three policies in the current product, but three, at least the first two are the most important one. There is backup and archive as well, which is not mentioned on the slide. So let's start with a placement policy, because this is the first one that you hit whenever you install a system. So when you install a system and you're storing your files, the placement policy basically defines where your files end up at the time you create new data in your system. So if you set, for example, the policy we mentioned here in that example, there is a rule HQ set pool gold for files at HQFS. All what it means is whenever you write data into the files at HQFS, the real physical data has to end up in the gold pool. So for those of you who are not very familiar with ILM and how that works, ILM basically separates the metadata information from the physical placement. So you can have a single file system and you have multiple directories below it, and in this case you have a directory called HQFS under the root mount point of the file system. So whenever you store data in HQFS, it physically ends up on a disk in the gold pool. The next rule basically says, are all other files set pool silver? That means if you are in the root mount point on your system and you create a file, it would end up in silver. But if you go below that level and down to the HQFS folder and you store a file there, it immediately ends up in the gold pool and not in the silver pool. So with placement, you basically define on what storage your data is ending up at the time you create it. And that is very important if you want to close or sign multiple independent service level agreements, for example, with your customers for specific data in your system. So with that rules, you can basically separate the data from the logical view on the file system with the physical place where you're storing the data, and that makes it very, very easy for you to create SLAs depending on the data that will be stored in a single system, even if you can share all the processing and storage capabilities for multiple customers running on the same system. So migration policy now gets very important if we're talking about the whole life cycle and how the data will be placed over time. So what the migration policy basically does is there is a small tool that is checking on a scheduled period if the data that is currently in the system is still compliant with the migration policy, or if we have any data in the system that is currently violating the policy. So to give you an example, you can set a policy that says every file in the file.hqfs where we created some data which hasn't been accessed since 30 days, for example, migrate from the gold pool to the silver pool. So even if the initial placement policy says, okay, whenever you create a file, put it in gold if it's under HQFS, but then the placement policy will never hit again for that particular file. So the migration policy basically defines now over lifetime what happens with the data stored inside HQFS or in any other place in the system. You just have to put a rule in place for it. So with that said, what you basically can do is you can define based on a couple of patterns where your data should reside over time. And one policy you could set, which is not explicitly mentioned here on the slide, but one policy you could also set is, when a file is not accessed for a year, for example, please move it out to the TSM, to the tape pool, not to the TSM pool, to the tape pool. So what basically happens is the data will be migrated with some internal HSM functions, and the data ends up on tape. But for the end user that is working with the system, the data still appears at the same place or at the same logical place from a file system point of view where it was before. The only difference is that if you have the subdirectory HQFS, you probably have three files, file 1, file 2, file 3. File 1 was just created. File 2 is older than 30 days or hasn't been accessed in 30 days, and file 3 hasn't been accessed since more than 2 years. That would mean you see three files, but based on the policies I described before, file 1 would be still in gold, file 2 would be now in the silver pool, so physically stored on the fiber channel disk on the other disk subsystem, and file number 3 would be put on tape, but for the end user, it's completely transparent. The only difference is when he accesses a file, it may be that file 1 gets opened very quickly, file 2 a little bit slower, and file 3 could take a minute or so to open because it takes some time to fetch the data from tape that the end user can actually really work on the data that he's trying to access. I hope that explains the policies very well. Otherwise, we are open to questions after the call. So other things we leverage from GPFS internally is from slide number 17. We're basically doing synchronous replication. So synchronous replication means we are able to synchronize two independent storage subsystems on a file system level to keep basically the system up and running even if a complete storage subsystem dies. So this is functionality people are knowing under the name on the hardware level. This is very equivalent to something like PPRC and data mirror from other vendors. So there are multiple technologies out that are used for doing that. We decided for doing that on a file system level because on a file system level, data replication is much more efficient. One of the main reasons for that is that if you're doing synchronous replication on the file system level, you can leverage both copies for reading because on a hardware level solution, it's always the way that one node is active and the other node is in active standby mode, which means the data is current on both sides, but you can always leverage just one copy of the data. And in our case, because we're doing it on a file level, we could leverage both sides for reading, And the other important piece is that whenever one side dies, the systems just continue to work without really any real impact to the system. So the system continues. In case of a hardware level solution, you have some downtime of the system. Independent if this is in the range of a couple of seconds or minutes, but there is definitely a downtime, versus in our case, when a disk drive fails, we don't have a downtime. The system just continues to run. In the worst case, the read performance of the system is a little bit slower than before, but that's the only impact you will have. So you could replace the old system, replicate the data again, and the customer wouldn't even realize that one of his storage subsystems has been died during operation. And that is a very, very great feature we're leveraging from GPFS. The other thing is cross-cluster mount. I'm not explaining that in more detail. It's basically the combination of multiple cells that I've mentioned at the beginning. So it can interconnect multiple of those SOFS clusters together, that they are looking from an administrative as well as from an end-user point of view like a single system. But cross-cluster mount works also over wide area network. So you could also connect multiple nodes that don't have a direct fiber channel connection in between, or dark fiber or something like this, where you just have some not too slow network connection between nodes. You can use cross-cluster mount to create a global namespace and have a single view on all the data from all points where you're connecting to the system. Slide 18, we're talking about snapshots. So the GPFS snapshots, they are very space efficient. It's basically very similar to a copy and write functionality in the file system. If you're going to slide 19, that shows how that integrates on the Windows side into the Windows Explorer. So if you're creating snapshots with the system, there is a function on the Windows client where you can integrate right mouse click properties. And then there is something where you can access previous version of your data, and then it shows that small screen, and the end user is able to retrieve by its own snapshots we made in the system and return to an earlier copy of his data without talking to any administrator or whatever. Okay, if we can go to slide number 21, I'm talking now what specifically is inside SOFS. So these are the various components that we are using inside SOFS. So GPFS, as you can see on the right picture, it's really the heart of the system. So GPFS is one of the most used infrastructures inside the system. Besides GPFS, we're using TSM as well as HSM in the system. So TSM is tightly integrated into the solution for doing extremely quick backups as well as restores. HSM is specifically used for the integrated information lifecycle management, and we're also using HSM functionality for doing an extremely quick restore inside the system, for doing a stub restore of files without really retrieving any huge data blocks from the tape, which improves the time for restore a lot in huge environments where you have really huge terabytes or multiple terabytes of data stored in such a system. CTDB, this is a layer on top HSM and GPFS. So CTDB is a development we've done together with the open source community, even if I would say 99% of the development was done by IBMers, but we shared part of that component with the open source community. And CTDB is basically an abstraction layer between the GPFS file system and all the other exporters we're running on top of GPFS. Because SOFS was designed that clients from independent operating systems and coming over from independent protocols are able to access the system. So SOFS exports data over NFS, over SIFS, as well as over HTTP and FTP and a couple of other protocols coming soon. So CTDB basically maintains that all that services are up and running all the time. So if, for example, one of the nodes in the system dies, then CTDB automatically migrates the external IP address for the service, as well as all the services and resources assigned to that particular node, and redistributes it to another node inside the cluster. That means, to give you an example, if you have, for example, two sites and every site has two nodes, if in one side one node dies for whatever reason, then CTDB basically redistributes the workload across the other nodes in the system. So if clients have been connected to that site while it's failing, the connection still survives. There are a couple of cases where we really can ensure a transparent failover. So, for example, if the client is doing an ActiveX copy against one of our SOFS nodes and that node dies, you would see on the Windows client side a very short pause of a fragment of a second, and then the copy process simply continues without the end user even noticing that the node that he was doing active transactions against has just been died. So we also have a couple of videos that I could send links around later to the people in the distribution list, which showing this kind of functionality. And it's very spectacular to see how the nodes survive really active data transfers. There are other cases where we still see an error on the client side, but that mainly depends on the application you are using. But we are continuously improving that feature, and this is the first and only offering that exists in the market, which really allows at this point in time a transparent failover of transactions between nodes when one of the nodes in the cluster dies. So this is a real high availability solution and not just a simple failover solution as many other competitors in that space offer. And yeah, we have a lot of enhancements to the Samba server. So Samba is used internally, but it's enhanced with multiple features like NTFS ACLs. We also support many, many other things. I can share a long list of things that we've changed specifically here, but that would definitely go over the time that we have for that session here. But it's not that you can't really compare a standard Samba version running on top of a Linux file system compared to the SOFS version here. So we have many, many additional features integrated into Samba that make that a really scalable solution here. The system is Red Hat based, so the customer basically gets a Red Hat 5.1 base OS together with the solution, and we leverage the daemons here. We extended the functionality with multiple scripts and various other things around that for the management. And then we have the SOFS graphical user interface, which is in that SOFS package, and the customer gets that together with IBM hardware. So one of the big important things to understand is that SOFS is a combination of all the components here on that chart. So we are not selling it in pieces. It always comes in one, so hardware, software, and services, and it's only supported in that combination, but with the nice advantage that the customer has a single point of contact for the whole system. So whenever the customer has a problem, we have a full-blown level 1 and level 2 support in place for SOFS. So the customer calls IBM Help. If he has signed an SOFS contract, he has a single point of contact for all hardware, software, service-related problems or questions, and he can basically throw it against the level 1. They deal it out internally if the soft level 2 support can't solve the problem because they identified it's a hardware issue or it's a GPFS issue or a soft issue or whatever. They route it to the proper level 2 or level 3 queue that is then working for that, but still is still the single face that the customer is basically seeing and is in contact with. So the customer doesn't have to call between multiple different parties and try to find the right contact for getting his problem fixed. He has a single point of contact, and we also offer in the first release there is a prerequisite which is a premium managed service to that. The premium managed service allows the customer to get really very quick support from IBM. So the customer basically creates a VPN connection between his site and IBM, and then IBM folks monitoring the system around the clock, and can basically immediately help when the system is going into an unhealthy status or whatever. That is called the premium service version. With the release we are shipping in May this year, there will also be an unmanaged version, so where the customer can run it on its own. But we also will change the model or the way we're pricing it in the premium version in the May time frame as well. So there is a lot of stuff that will be announced in the May time frame, I'm pretty sure. On the next slide, you see the storage hardware we support. Right now, on slide number 23, you see the blade center hardware we support. 24 shows rack-mounted hardware. I'm skipping those slides here now. I think what is more important, talking a little bit about the way how you can really use that at the customer side, so there are multiple use cases for that. On 27, the simplest one is displayed here. It's a simple SOFS single site setup, so you have one location where you have a SOFS system running, and you have customers from this side or from other sites that simply access the data in that single location. That's the easy one. On slide number 28, this is more for customers that have more strict requirements on availability. So the storage is basically synchronous replicated on-site, so you have two independent storage subsystems that are replicated. You have multiple servers. In that scenario already, whatever piece of the software fails or dies, as long as you don't lose a critical mass from each individual component, the system still continues to work. So as an example, if you have two storage subsystems here which are synchronous mirrored, if one dies, the system still continues to work. The same would be if you have five nodes in the system and two nodes, so five servers running the source code, and two nodes in the cluster fail, the cluster simply continues to survive. The end users wouldn't even realize that two nodes have been died. The only side effect could probably be that they're having a little bit lower performance as before, when the system was running very utilized before the event happened. Slide number 29 shows a little bit more complex setup. So this is basically synchronous replication across two sites. So this is a typical two data center scenario where the customer wants to have everything twice. And even if a complete data center dies for whatever reason, the system would simply continue to work. The end users would simply connect over a different network path, but depending on the way the system is implemented, even that would be transparent for the clients if the system is designed properly and installed properly at the customer side. Slide number 30 shows the way how you can have two separated SOFS systems. They are interconnected with a cross-cluster mount. So the end users can connect to each individual system. They can access data on this system, but they also can access data from the other system, but it doesn't look like it's a different system. They still connect to the same system, and simply one of the subdirectories or one of the shares or the NFS exports, whatever, is internally referencing a file on the other side, but that's really absolutely transparent for the end user. He wouldn't even realize that this is a different system. Slide number 31 shows now the graphical user interface, so that is one of the big value adds for SOFS. So we have a complete end-to-end management solution in the system. What you see on slide number 31, that is basically availability management. So it shows what is how many nodes in the system are available, what status they are in. It shows a small event log in the system. There is also a very huge central event log available, which I don't have a screenshot in the slides now, which will be shipped by the end of this month. So the end of this month is a new release of SOFS, which has a lot of improvements specifically on manageability and RAS functionalities. On slide number 32, we see node management. So this is basically where you manage each of the individual nodes. You can see the operating system levels. You can see multiple things here like IP addresses and very low-level stuff as well, if you like. Slide number 33, it shows the file system management. Here we are managing the one big or multiple smaller file systems in a cluster. It shows various performance and other parameters that you can change here over that graphic user interface. We also have multiple other panels for file sets and quotas and so on. I don't have screenshots for all the various features. Oh, on the next slide, 34, I have the quota management as well. So here you see, for example, a quota report. So the system is capable for setting quotas on a per-user or on a per-group level. It also allows you to set quotas on a per-file set level as well. And this is simply a report. It basically shows each individual user the individual quotas. We are able to set hard, soft quotas on files as well as on the number of gigabytes stored in the system. Slide number 35 shows system utilization reports. So here you're basically seeing the various parameters of the nodes in the system, like memory, CPU, disk activity, and all this kind of stuff can be immediately accessed over the graphical user interface. So you don't have to go anywhere on the console, on the nodes, or whatever. It's all done and managed intuitive over a graphical user interface. So slide number 37, basically it's the conclusion already. Then I'm talking a little bit about future in 2 minutes. So SFS basically combines clustered file system with global namespace capabilities. It's deployed centrally, and you really have a central system that you're managing, growing, backing up centrally. It scales really horizontally, not virtually. You can really scale with the number of nodes and the disk drives you add to the system. So there are some architectural limits, but they are very, very high, as you can see on the next slide as well. It provides a completed integrated lifecycle, information lifecycle management. It can differ as multiple different tiers. It is completely policy-driven for the placement and migration of the file. It offers synchronous block-level replication, it offers multiple site configuration, and it also allows you to really build high available systems, including disaster-resistant systems across multiple data centers, multiple sites. 38, it's just a simple number sheet explaining a little bit the difference between multiple other solutions in the market, but I think that's not extremely interesting. So if you go to slide number 40, there is a little bit of an outlook on what's coming next. So one thing we're working on, for example, is some real-time performance analyzers. So there will be possibilities in the future version of SOTS where we can really show real-time graphs on transfers on network as well as on the fiber channel internally. So for the client as well as server response times, we show an end-to-end view of the data flow that happens. And that is primarily developed for doing easily diagnostics of performance problems inside such a cluster. So it's a very complex piece that we're working on, and it will add very great benefits on top of the current SFS offering. Slide number 41, you probably can read most of the stuff offline. So that will be some online transparent data migration that's coming. It allows you to integrate existing NAS boxes. The SFS system will have a subdirectory pointing to the old system, and whenever you access a specific file in the system, it automatically migrates it into SOS, and at the next access to that file, you would access the local stored SOS file instead of the file on the old NAS system. So what it basically does, it sucks out data from existing NAS systems and automatically migrates it inside the SOS system. Slide number 42, global namespace consolidation. We are able to consolidate multiple NAS systems in the near future under that soft umbrella. So you have a single global namespace which incorporates existing NAS systems as well at your campus, and you have really a single system even for old existing data islands that can be incorporated here. 43, this is asynchronous replication, though that's specifically for disaster recovery as well as for increased backups. We can replicate data over IP between multiple sites. And there are a couple of other things coming. You can see the roadmap on slide 45 plus. So that's just part of the roadmap. There are probably more items as well, but they're not mentioned on the roadmap yet. So it's basically the end of the presentation. So I would be open for questions now. If people like it.
If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please ensure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question. We'll now take a question from Michael Kaczmar.
Hi, my name is Mike Kaczmar. I work in the Americas. Very nice job on everything. I'd like a little clarity. I think N-Series has a similar product for global file management. I'd like to have a better understanding of, does this complement or compete? Because you don't mention you support N-Series in your list of storage products.
Right.
I'd like a little clarity because I think
yes.
in N-Series they're selling a similar product that competes with this whole global space.
Yeah, so basically what you're talking about is something that is called VFM. And
yes,
VFM
I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, right. And VFM is somehow competing or overlapping here, but it's really targeting a little bit in a different area. So what VFM does, it only solves the management and data migration issue so that you can manage multiple filers over a single graphical user interface, a single front end. But what it doesn't solve at all is a scalability issue. So because in the SOFS world, as I mentioned earlier, all nodes are active. So with VFM, you have a single global view on the data, but the data is still stored in Ireland. It solves the manageability of the multiple islands, but it doesn't solve any of the scalability issues we have in the real huge environments. We also have charts explaining the real difference between multiple detailed level features of the various products. So if you are interested in a more comparison on that, just drop me an email and I can send you some charts where we explain exactly on some feature levels what the difference between the various solutions are. So what I'm trying to say in a short summary is you can use VFM together with SOFS. It's possible you can also manage the SOFS systems in theory under VFM. The question is, does it really make sense? Because VFM is more a workaround for customers that already have that huge islands, where SOFS is a solution for replacing all the islands into a new, really scalable system.
Right. I like to see those charts for clarity because I'm still a little confused, but I understand. I need to do some reading and a better understanding, but I think we're going to run into this confusion because you have a nice set of material here, but I'm still a little confused, but I think I get what you're saying.
Okay, great.
We'll now take a question from Jose Alciano.
Yes, my question regards to the replication function. Does it support the synchronous mode today?
So the synchronous mode is supported since years in GPFS. And yes, SOFS supports synchronous replication today already. Asynchronous will be added now with the next release, and the synchronous replication is supported since a long time already.
Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. We'll now take a question from Lon Haas.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for your presentation. I'd like to ask you, who is the what organization is the lead sales organization for this solution?
SOFS is enabled for all channels, so GTS can sell it, STG can sell it. I can bring you in contact with a global executive for SOFS. It's basically Mac Basil. I think I mentioned him in the slides at the end somewhere as well. If not, drop me a mail. But the owner of the solution is GTS, but the development organization for that is STG. And if you go forward to a customer, all different sales reps get their revenues for their pieces in the solution. So even if we sell this as a package, the STG guys get the revenue for the full hardware in the system, the GTS guys get the full revenue for the services, implementation, and configuration, and the software folks get the revenue for all the software parts inside the solution.
Very good. So could you provide me the name of that individual that you said is the lead?
Yeah, drop me a mail. I sent you the contact.
Okay, thank you.
And again, to ask a question, please press star 1. And it appears there are no further questions.
Okay,
Okay, well, thank you all for taking the time to learn more about SOFS. And if you do have any colleagues who'd like to hear this presentation, it will be recorded, and it has been recorded, and it will be posted on both Partner World and the Tivoli Talk site. Thank you.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation, and have a wonderful day.